I'm Coulter DeVries, owner of Ranch Investor Advisory and Brokerage Services. I'm an accredited land consultant with the Realtor Land Institute and proud member of ASFMRA.
The Ranch Investor Podcast is the most downloaded and informative industry-specific content that intrigues while entertains.
Dallas Mount, the long-anticipated, long-awaited Ranch Investor Podcast featuring Ranching for Profit. Dallas, I should send you an invoice for how many times we reference your business on this podcast and all the free plugs you've received up to this point. Your goodwill, your brand value may have improved, attributable to the conversations we've been having over the last 3 years on this podcast. So thank you for coming on. And
well, you bet. It sounds like I owe you a thank you. I should probably put you on the Christmas gift basket list or something.
There, huh? Oh, yeah. I deserve some candy and nuts every January or December 25th.
Thanks for having me on, Colter. I'm excited to be on with you.
Why is it that what you do kind of sells itself in a way? Ranching for profit. Is largely network driven, it seems like, and your members, your past students like me, are evangelicals. They are branded and they go out and they preach. I mean, they do your marketing for you. You don't even need to put together an MLM.
Yeah, well, I don't, because I'm probably not the right one to ask that question to, but we do have a really loyal group of past participants, alumni, followers, and we're really blessed that they do. They really carry the load for us in terms of advertising. So it's we're really, really blessed to have the alumni that we have.
What is Ranching for Profit? Let's start with that.
So Ranching for Profit is a 7-day business management school for people in agriculture. So it's based on the idea that knowing how to raise crops, knowing how to raise livestock is not the same thing as knowing how to run a business that does those things, right? So most of the people that come to our school are brought up in ag or have a deep background in ag, and they're really good at the production side of the business, right? They're good at getting calves on the ground, getting crops in the bin, getting cows bred, right? Doing the day-to-day work on, but oftentimes they are really novices when it comes to running a business. Putting together an economic plan for the coming year, putting together a cash flow projection, talking about your leverage strategy, talking about employment agreements, bringing people, part of the crew, getting people unified around a mission and vision. So those are the things that we really come in and help people do. We've been doing it about 35 years. I'm the third owner of the company. So I'm carrying the torch and that the people that come before me have really established. That's what we do in a nutshell.
Well, you were my facilitator, my coach, when I went here in Billings, Montana. And at that time, Dave Pratt, he stopped in. You were just taking it over, I believe, from Dave. And we were talking about our situation. And I was talking to Dave about how I had 100% levered up bred heifers in 2014.
Oh, boy.
With FSA beginning farmer loans and then some equipment, 115% equipment loans through Ag Direct at the time. So I was, I was more highly levered than Silicon Valley Bank. And Dave looked at me, and I don't want to put words in his mouth. I'm trying to quote him, but it was something towards the effect of, how could you be so stupid? And here's how I could be so stupid, Dallas, is I have a finance background. I was 25 at the time, and I was like, I know my P&Ls. I know my balance sheet. I can make this work. I know my cash flow statements. I can make this work. And that was not the case. I could not make it work.
Well, you got some tuition out of that, didn't you?
Oh, boy.
Some good lessons from that.
the lesson learned on losing 40% on the value of those cows and the equipment was that was a second student loan.
Yeah, man, wow. Well, it's interesting you bring that up because we're building right back to those times right now that we're in, and there's going to be a lot of people that make those same mistakes you made here in the next couple of years. So it there'll be some real opportunities for people that are paying attention, and some really costly mistakes for those that get caught on it. So
yes, and we are definitely in a cattle cycle that. When I was in that cattle cycle group think, those around me were saying, oh, it's different this time. It'll last this time. The cattleman has been, he is owed. He's going to get his due. We're going to make money. There's going to be $1,600 calves for the next 5-7 years. Life is going to be good. We're going to get ours this time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that, all that stuff just repeats itself about every 10 years. And here we are again. So.
Yeah. And so, you know, one thing that listeners have said to me about whether it's a guru, a consultant, a seminar, is they tune in hoping to get the secret sauce. They want the ingredients. They want the answer right then and there. And I'm going to try to divulge all your secrets, Dallas. I'm going to try to give them all your secret sauce. But let's just start with the program. One of my takeaways from 9 years ago or so, however long it was that there is no secret sauce. There is no written in stone answer to everyone's operation. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. And we get, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about Ranching for Profit. Oh, when you go to Ranching for Profit, they're going to tell you to not make hay, to calve in June, to do all these things. And we don't say any of those things, right? People hear that sometimes, but that's not what we say. What we tell people to do is let the numbers do the talking, right? Let's figure out what the heck your business looks like from an economic, from a financial perspective. Let's find out what's working well. Let's see if things jump off the page is not working. And then let's examine, what do you as an owner, what do you as a manager, what do you want? What are you passionate about? What are your skills? And then let's build a business plan around those things. So we very much let the numbers do the talking and, you know, try to dig deep on that individual person. You know, if it's an owner, we're going to say, okay, what are the real values you as an owner want out of this place? And how can we meet those? And so, but people often hear that, oh, you got to follow this recipe. And I don't believe there's a recipe to follow to run a profitable ranch. But I do believe there are principles that we can apply to every ranch and that will guide us towards that direction.
Well, you're saying that you let the numbers, the data do the talking, and that's very tangible. And that is numerical. It's easy to see. It's easy to feel that out and have an idea of, are we negative cash flow, positive cash flow? Are we making economic profit? That is I think it's very simplistic because you're dealing with, it's just math. It's just math. And you're, Dallas, you're kind of telling me we want to be data driven. We want to be informed by real numbers. But one of my key takeaways was actually soft and philosophical, challenging the paradigm. I think you teaching my course did a great job of hammering in that there is no right answer for anyone. And you talked about what values and vision is driving this operation or this set of enterprises. But really, what can you do to think outside the box and challenge that paradigm that we are cowboys or we are ranchers or our country is only for stockers or you can't make money with stockers, so we have to do cow-calf pairs. And I think I got a lot of the soft kind of philosophical thinking from you guys that said, well, why is that? Ask more questions, challenge that. Challenge these inputs. That was a big one. Do you need all these inputs?
Right, right. What, yeah, so our key client that's coming to us, we put about 550 people through the Ranching Profit School last year, right? And there's a wide variety of people from, you know, people just getting into ranching, maybe coming from another career, Or people who are the fifth generation on a place, right? They've been on that place for 30 years. But our key client is probably that multi-generational family rancher that's looking for different results from their ranch. It has not been economically rewarding, right? It's generally just a huge amount of work to keep this thing going. So they're looking to restructure that business in some way. So one of the things we start with them is just starting saying, challenging those paradigms. What are the beliefs you have about ranching? And let's just start with an example one. Some people believe that ranching cannot be profitable. And that is their belief, right? And if that is truly your belief, why would you even attempt to change things to make it profitable? Because in your mind, it's an impossible task, right? So we really try to examine some of those deeply held paradigms. And some of them, you know, people put right back in their place and say, I'm going to hold on to this one. And other ones people take and look at it and say, well, this one's completely wrong. And let me throw another one at you that maybe some of your listeners might relate to. And that would be, quality cattle are what make a ranch profitable. Right. You know, you hear that a lot, right?
Absolutely.
I'm going to buy this ranch and I'm going to put quality cattle here because we run things well. And a lot of people who are successful in other businesses, that was the approach that worked, right? Well, when you come into ranching, generally when we say quality cattle, that means like, right, they're all black, they're of this pedigree, right? Or fill in the blank, right? Whatever that person decides is quality. Oftentimes what we see is those kind of cattle are among the least profitable of any ranching operation we examine. Now, there's always outliers, but oftentimes when we see high productive cattle, it means they come with a lot of stuff to support them, right? You need tractors, machines, people running around at calving time, you know, helping these calves be born, putting tags in their ears, putting them in barns in the wintertime, right? And the list goes on and on and on. And pretty soon you've got this enormous overhead thing that there's no way that, I mean, even if you're selling these calves for $3,000, there's no way that they're going to support all this overhead you've put in place to support them. So what we often find in ranching when we look into the numbers is sometimes these animals that the industry might define as not of the highest quality, right, are actually among the most profitable animals, right? And it's another paradigm that oftentimes people struggle with is this idea that I need to do things in quotes right in order to run a profitable ranch. And that's just not correct.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard them all. I am that fifth generation, multi-generational rancher who had probably had a flawed paradigm, Dallas. And I'd heard that good cows don't cost you money. They make you money.
Yeah.
But good cows, as you mentioned, come with a lot of inputs.
Yeah. If you've got a good cow, you should probably sell her because somebody's probably willing to overpay for her.
Oh, boy. You're bringing up selling your best cow. That is a contentious issue. So in the essence of this podcast, Ranch Investor, let's do a case study per se, Dallas. I am wanting to buy a ranch in Montana, but I don't want to run it. I want all the benefits of the Schedule F write-off from livestock production. So I probably need to get some cows and a cowboy and a manager, foreman, some tractors and side-by-sides. I need a land base. But, you know, I don't want to be out there operating it myself. I just want to hunt, want to recreate with my family. What would be some realistic expectations for me? Is this something I can do on a 200-head ranch? Is this something where I'm going to have to economies of scale get up to 800 head just to break even? You know, if I'm green and Kevin Costner has got me convinced I need to buy a ranch in Montana, where do I start with thinking about not losing my ass in this endeavor? And what are these endeavors? What are these enterprises that I keep hearing about?
Yeah, all right. Good question. Boy, we could talk all day on those things. Trying to figure out what I want to tackle first. So, we see these quite often, right? We have quite a few customers either on the ownership side or on the management side that are coming to us in a situation like what you've described. And so maybe it's somebody who was successful in a previous career and is wanting to park some of that capital in a ranch asset and wants to do a good job of taking care of the land. And so they're bringing a lot of their thoughts and their skills and their past experiences to this ranch, right? And the idea of put good people in place and give them the tools they need to be successful is often what they bring with them. And many times we see that backfire in a ranching operation, right? So if I bought a ranch and maybe my realtor says, hey, you know, this guy has lived here his whole life and he's able to run it for you, right? You know, and so we're going to say, sure, let's put him there and let's give him the tools to be successful. Well, what we often find is this, the skills, and I mean, and this person's probably a wonderful person, right? I'm not taking any credibility, anything against the person that they are, right? Their character. But they're probably a really good cowboy, you know, or foreman or, you know, those things. They're often not a good asset manager, right? They're not the right person to, if you really look at what you're putting them in charge of, many times it's a multi-million dollar asset with, you know, $1 million a year moving through the thing, right? And is this really the person who I would put in charge of that? What we often see is, you know, you put a cowboy in charge of running a ranch and they're really interested in the animals and, you know, and they're interested in having the right tools to get their jobs done pretty easy. It doesn't mean that they're good at putting together a business plan that works and at managing cash flow and at managing all the different moving parts that a ranch involves. What we often see would be an example of like a 400 or 500 cow ranch where the owner's coming to us and saying, man, I bought this thing 5 years ago. We put some capital improvements in it and the thing's just bleeding me cash, right? Maybe it's costing me $300,000 to $500,000 a year to keep the doors open on this place. And I was fine with that for the short term, but it's getting a little old, right? And I'm ready for it to stop. And so we look at what's going on and, you know, the person who's on the ground doing it is like, well, you know, if we're going to run good cattle, well, we're going to calve them when people typically calve, you know, which is maybe February or March. And if we're doing that, we better have good equipment to feed them with. And we need a four-wheel drive tractor and we need all this stuff. And by the way, there's all this work to be done. So, you know, it's me, but I'm going to need a helper or two. And pretty soon your payroll is up to $300,000 and your total gross income is $500,000, right? These things just don't make sense, right? And your annual equipment repair and depreciation bill is, you know, $100,000 or more, right? And A plus B does not equal C to make these things work. So what I would encourage people to do is look for competent business managers to put in place for these operations. Somebody that can really understand. So it's more than just managing cows and managing grass and you know, managing the assets. It's about somebody that can understand what are the owner values that we want this place to build. You know, when you describe things like, I want a place when I show up there, I feel welcome, right? And it's a place that I enjoy the wildlife component of. I enjoy having healthy natural resources, right? When I bring people out there to enjoy the place with me, you know, this is what we want it to look like, right? This is the way we want the facilities to be caught up. From an ag operation standpoint, this is what I expect it to do, right? Maybe that expectation is I want it to cash flow its own operations, right? Is I want it to actually generate an economic profit to contribute to the other benefits that this ranch is providing, right? So somebody that can articulate those things, if you're looking towards a competent ranch manager, they're going to understand what owner value is. They're going to develop a management plan to produce those owner values. They're going to communicate the risks, right? This could go well, this could go wrong. If we're buying stockers, right, the market might move on us and we might be upside down on these. If we're going to run cows on it, right, these are the upsides of having a cow herd. These are the downsides of running a cow herd, and really understand how to manage towards those owner objectives and put them. And it's not uncommon for us to see competent managed ranches, produce, I'd say a 400 cow ranch should be able to cover its own operations, right? You should be able to cover a full-time employee there that covers the needs of the equipment needs they're going to have and those kind of things. So, I mean, that's a very reasonable expectation. So it's not unusual for us to see where incompetent management might produce a $300,000 to $400,000 economic or financial loss every year, and you put competent management in place and they turn that to zero, right? So essentially turning the needle by $300,000 to $400,000 a year would not at all be out of line. So it's, you know, you want to look for people, and when you find those right people, reward them, put them in place, and then turn them loose for success. But just because somebody's good at riding and roping doesn't mean they're a ranch manager. And I think that's another term that we use wrong in this business. We say, I want a ranch manager. And then what do you want them to do? Well, I want them to fix machines, irrigate, fix fence, you know, check water. That's not management, right? That's a ranch labor unit. So if you really want a manager, they're going to develop plans. They're going to budget. They're going to talk about strategy. They're going to communicate with ownership.
Now, ranching for profit, did this start in the 80s with Alan Savory?
So Alan Savory and Stan Parsons came over from Africa together, and they started working together. Savory was the ecologist. He taught the grazing parts and ecology part. And Parsons, Stan Parsons, is our founder. He taught the economic portions, the human, you know, how to get people working together, how to develop these business plans. Those two guys worked together for a season or two, and then that relationship kind of fell apart. Savory went on to found Holistic Management and do his thing, and Parsons founded Ranch Management Consultants, our company, in the 80s, and he ran it for about 20 years, sold it to Dave Pratt. Dave Pratt ran it for about 20 years and sold it to me, and here we are.
And Stan, he has a couple books out there, publications, research papers. He is one of those marquee names when it comes to thinking outside of the box and making a ranch profitable.
He absolutely is. And Stan and Alan were really thought leaders of that time period. And they took a lot of barbs because of it, right? A lot of people shot a lot of arrows their way because they were saying things that very much could challenge conventional wisdom. Dave Pratt, who I bought the company from, he's been a prolific writer. He's got a couple of books out there. You can find them on our website. He's really been the one that took what Stan started and reframed it into a very digestible format and made it available out there much, much wider. So talking
about that format, digestible, the model going back to the 80s, mid, even early 80s, that, and then Holistic Management with Alan Savory, today that has been repackaged and sold very well as regenerative grazing, regenerative agriculture. And what I want to get your feedback, are you guys sitting there at Ranching for Profit being like, hey, you sons of bitches, we've been doing this for over 35 years. Why are you culturally appropriating what we have done? Like, you're rebranding it, greenwashing it, and just putting it out there in a new package. What is your take on regenerative ag, this new fad that has people in the urban areas going crazy and they don't even know what the hell it is?
Oh, you know, actually I'm pretty dang excited by it, because we're getting caught on what I call the snowball of the Regen Ag movement, right? I mean, this has been gaining a lot of momentum the last couple of years, and we've been caught up in that and now going along for the ride with it, right? And the demand for our services and the people attending the schools and the things that we've been doing have grown exponentially the last few years. And I really credit a lot of that with just this Regen Ag movement. And people are looking for stuff, right? They're looking for things. I think the unique piece that we bring is we're working with the people who are actually doing this as a business, right? Our clients are the people running, you know, 200 to 2,000 cows, right? Where a lot of the movements in the Regen Ag thing is the person who's got 12 chickens in their backyard with two sheep, right? And that's really not our client. Our client is not the hobby agronomist, right? Our client is the person who's doing this to make a living doing it. And so I feel like we're actually working with the people who are out there on the land, managing landscapes at scale, and doing cool things, and we can speak to that, right? Those are our clients. We know who those people are. We speak their language. We're in touch with them. So I'm excited by the whole movement. You know, we probably don't use the word regen like you see it in a lot of places. We we've been doing what we've been doing for a long time, and we keep our language pretty much the same. But the stuff we're teaching has a lot of dovetails with the regen movement.
So when I think about your business, why Ranching for Profit has been so successful, I think of a Yogi Berra yogiism, which is hit it where they ain't. And you and Dave Pratt came from Extension. So us taxpayers, we educated you and Dave Pratt, and then you turned around and monetized that education on us taxpayers without paying a royalty back to us. Is it because Ranching for Profit is so successful because you're doing something that Extension is missing?
I don't know that it's Extension's missing it. Extension has changed who they are over the last few decades, right? And I was a part of that. I had a wonderful career at Extension. I love my time at Extension, but I was stale, right? I was teaching for Dave Pratt when I worked at Extension, right? And so I'd take leave from my Extension job and go teach Ranching for Profit. And when I do that, I'm getting to work with clients who are pushing the envelope, who are challenging conventional wisdom, who are leading these amazing ag businesses, right? And we'd have these, you know, deep conversations about, well, what if we did this, right? That'd make $1 million change to our business, right? And we're all excited about that. And then I'd go back to my Extension work, and the phone would ring, and somebody'd say, so what do I spray this weed with, right, is the question they'd call me with. And it was like my dial at Ranching for Profit was turned up to 8, 9, and 10. And I'm getting to work with industry, you know, people who are leading their businesses and doing cool stuff. And then I'd go back to Extension, and I'd like to have to turn the dial all the way back down to 2, right? And to me, that was just, I knew I wasn't long for the Extension world when I started working with Ranching for Profit, because it's just so much more rewarding. I mean, at one week of teaching a Ranching for Profit school, I would reach more people, reach more acres of land, more head of cattle than I would in a whole year of working with Extension. Right. And the changes you'd be helping people make would be fundamentally changing their lives, where Extension, you might be talking to somebody about, well, do I put 4 units of N on or 6 units of N? Right. Well, who the hell cares? You know,
why hasn't what you and Parsons and Alan Savory and Dave Pratt, what you guys have been preaching and getting paid very well to preach, why hasn't that been assimilated or accepted into the government model, starting with, let's say, the universities, and then of course an extension of the universities is Extension. So you got the universities, their research, you got Extension, and then a lot of that feeds into USDA, the Farm Bill, CSP, all these programs paying farmers and ranchers to do something. I don't know what they're paying them to do, just to exist and stay alive, I think, at this point, to make sure we have food prepared for a war with China, potentially. I don't see any other reason for the Farm Bill other than food security to fight wars. But why hasn't your model been taken up higher through the ranks, that maybe we should think about the whip and the carrot, the incentives of incentivizing producers to be lean, low cost producers, low input, some of those things that you challenge us to do at the school? Doesn't seem like it's widely accepted in the Senate.
Yeah. I don't know that I can answer that question very well. And just to be honest, I really don't spend much time thinking about it. You know, we work with the people that come to us and are looking to move their businesses forward. And I don't spend much time worried about why that guy back there isn't interested. You know, when you step back and look at it, most farms and ranches are essentially big hobbies, right? And people, they really don't want, they've really never thought of them that they could be economic drivers to their life, right? They just see it as, this is what we do, right? And you look at the people that are in charge of the decision-making on most farms and ranches, and it's people in their retirement age. So what are they interested in doing? They're interested in keeping everything the same. They're interested in doing whatever they did last year again next year, right? As long as they can meet their obligations to the bank and whatever it is, they're very happy being you know, change averse and just sitting there and being mad at everybody. And you know, it's an easy narrative to tell yourself that the reason my business doesn't work is because we were in drought or we were in flood or the government did this or the government did that or the markets moved here or the markets moved there, right? That's a very comfortable place to be because then it's not your fault, right? Well, the truth of the matter is most of these farms and ranchers are structured to fail from the beginning, right? They're, even if they got perfect rains and even the markets were perfect, the business would still fail because it's not structured to be successful. So it, you know, and you look at a bell curve of ag producers and most of your government stuff and your, it's set up to serve the middle of that bell curve, right? And those are the people that they're talking to, okay? I would go insane if I had to spend my time working in the middle of the bell curve. I'm fortunate enough that we get to work with the people that are out on, you know, I wouldn't say the lunatic fringe, but pretty dang close, right? We're out there with the people that are looking for what's going on, right? What's the next thing? What's driving forward? And sure, we're going to get some things wrong and get our you know, hand stepped on every now and then, but that's so much more exciting than just waiting around 20 years. The things that the producers that we're working with are doing are 20 and 30 years ahead of where the university is. And so I'm not going to wait around for the university to catch up, right? I'm going to be out there making another 100,000 every year, you know, managing my ranch for profit instead of waiting around for the university to catch up.
Yeah, your clientele is three standard deviations away from the mean. They are the outliers.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And it sounds like you're so focused on kind of what you do to work with what is within your control on a ranch within these enterprises, the operation, that you're not putting in a budget, the first line item is the EQIP or CSP or PRF or LRP. You're not saying, put that at the top of your pro forma.
Yeah. If, you know, I'm not philosophically opposed to those things or anything like that, but I do caution people, don't let those programs drive your business strategy, right? That's a really dangerous route to go down. And we've seen that happen in traditional row crop farming, right? And that's where a lot of those businesses are, is the government programs are driving the business strategy. And that's a terrible place to be. You know, you set your business strategy. And then if a government program comes along and says, hey, we want to support you in that, and it fits, and it fits your value system to use that, well, we'll plug in, right? But it's a really dangerous thing when you're letting the programs drive your strategy.
Well, and also what I hear from you just now, Dallas, is that part of what you're working with is, I don't know if it's something you can shape. Maybe you can tell me in your experience if you've been able to shape it, but it's the character of the person who's receptive and willing to change. It takes radical acceptance and radical vulnerability and a complete suppression of ego to show up to your program and leave all excuses at the door, because you can't show up and minimize your failures. You can't normalize them. You can't excuse them away. You're stripped down bare to your own character, that this is on me. This is my responsibility. It's either my success or my folly. I can't blame the markets. I can't blame God and the climate. And I can't blame anyone else but myself.
Yeah, one of the questions we ask to get the conversation rolling is, we say in agricultural businesses, the biggest factor determining long-term profit or loss is management. You think that's true or false? And when you actually examine that, it's 100% true, right? The thing that determines your business's long-run profit or loss is management, right? And the best thing about that is that's 100% under your control. Right? You're responsible for that. To dive into this just a little bit deeper, right? We hear all the time, you know, when you get farmers and ranchers together, the three things they're going to talk about are, what's the weather, what's the market, and what's the dang government doing, right? So things you can't control. What people think, that if rain falls on my ranch and I get the rain just right, you know, all my problems are going to be solved. If the market moves up, all my problems are going to be solved, right? And that's absolutely not true. When you look at what the things that actually create profitability in farms and ranches, it's not when the markets are right. It's not when the rain falls, right? It's actually just the opposite of those things, right? When you have droughts in that area that you're ranching, that provides enormous opportunity for you to take advantage of that, right? When you look at it, when a drought occurs, the person who has feed, when everybody else is out of feed, and the person who has cash, when everybody else is cash strapped, is in a very advantageous position, right? And market changes, right? When markets go up, that's actually, if you look over about a 5-year time horizon, that's going to be a terrible thing for ag businesses. Okay. When markets go up, because all the input costs just trail right along with them. And then what farmers and ranchers do is they tend to redeploy that additional capital that's coming into the business and things that increase their overheads, right? So they restructure their business at a higher overhead point. And then when those markets move, as they're always going to, right, now their business is structured up here at a point that it no longer can support itself at the long-term market trade. And then all the input costs are now restructured high. So actually having high market prices for the things that we're producing, long run, create more business struggles than they create business successes. So just like this inflation thing, right? We were at our executive link meetings here a few months ago. We were asking everybody in our EL program. EL is our follow-up program to Ranching for Profit. So it's kind of our, you know, top 20% that come out of the school. We get into that. We were asking them, what is your strategy around the high inflation and high interest rates? And the consensus was, bring it on. That was the consensus, is it's going to take the marginal players out of the game, and it's going to create more opportunity for those of us that are structuring our business to be successful at those, right? If I'm making money paying 8% interest, right, bring it on, because I'm just going to grow this thing. And, you know, the people that couldn't make the 4% interest payments, they're going to be out of the game, right? But so anyway,
tell me more about this executive link. This is the elite of the Ranching for Profit. Is this something that me as an absentee landowner who has a $2 million 80 head ranch near Red Lodge, Montana, is that something that would work for me?
Yeah, it absolutely is. What we do is we take people that are alumni of the Ranching for Profit School that are looking to implement, strategic level change in their businesses, and we bring them in and put them on peer advisory boards. So we've got about 130 EL member businesses from across the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And so they meet 3 times a year. When they meet, they go through a really tightly facilitated process. That's what we provide, is the facilitation for that. And so a board is 6 businesses. So these 6 businesses are going to be on that board probably for 3 to 5 years together on that board. So if you're a member of EL for 5/6 of that meeting, you're an advisor, right? You're looking into somebody else's business. They're putting their financials on the table, right? If let's say you're on my board and you're managing for an absentee ranch owner, right? I'm going to be asking you, well, you know, what are the owner values? What do they want from this place, right? When they show up, how are they going to have a good time on this ranch? What about the financial goals? What kind of enterprise mix do they want? And then I'm going to be challenging you on your plan to achieve those things, right? So you serve strategic level advice to each other. And then for 1/6 of that meeting, you know, each person gets to be in the hot seat. And we go through, each business gets about 1/2 day of devoted time at each of those sessions. And we meet 3 times a year. And it's really a cool process, because that's where the real work gets done. So you get to see people that move their businesses from, you know, where they start when they come into the program to achieving pretty significant things. And, you know, we've got some boards that that have some absentee or some professional ranch managers for absentee landowners on those boards. We've got a lot of owner operators on those boards. We've got a lot of people who are just starting, you know, and EL is not right for somebody who runs a really small scale business and wants to keep it small scale. But if you're currently running a small scale business, but 3 years from now, you know, you're going to grow it to support your life full time, then EL is absolutely right, because you're going to be making a lot of major decisions about asset acquisitions and, you know, things like that, that the board can help you think through.
What is small scale versus full time? Is that just your opportunity cost?
I mean, you could look at it from a gross income standpoint, right? If I'm doing a business that has, you know, $200,000 gross, right? That's not going to support a family full time, right? But if I'm looking at moving that to $1 million business in the next 3 to 5 years, right? Then that's probably a good fit to come in, right? And we've got some businesses that are doing 20 mil, right? So they're going to be all different scales. And actually the diversity is really useful, right? It's great to have a large operator on the board with somebody who's just starting out, right? Because they're going to offer different insights for each other.
So if I just, Dallas, we're going to do a little more role playing here. I just bought a $15 million ranch in Montana. It's sexy as all hell. I only bought it for the elk hunting, but I know that it can make money. It should make money. It should take care of itself, at least pay the property taxes and insurance. Then I got this issue of management, and I was listening to the Ranch Investor podcast, and Dallas Mount said that over the long term, the main factor for ranch's profitability is management. However, I got this silver-tongued, sleazy ranch broker who tells me that he can manage the place for 100 basis points. AUM, assets under management, not animal unit months. He can do it for 1% annually. And that seems fair, but I would like to know, Dallas, I would like to hear Dallas support his claim that management is the deciding factor. What is the R squared, the covariance of correlation? Does management explain 60% of profits, or is it more like 45% or 80%? To what degree is management responsible for long-term profits?
Yeah, it's a good question. Back up just a hair. We got to define how we're looking at profit and what control I as a manager have over that equation, right? If you as the absentee owner are going to put me in a situation of a super high overhead structure, right? When you come out, you like to hunt and fish, and right? So we've got 16 snowmobiles, 35 four-wheelers for all your buddies, and I've got this lodge I got to support, right? That's not a fair ask. And I can't be held to producing profits to cover owner value draws, right? But if you're looking at me to manage the operational, the ag operations of the ranch, and those are the overheads that I need to support, I'm in, right? And I can take that over, right? And so of that, I would say it's going to be, your R square is going to be up closer to that 65, maybe even 85%, if that's the definition of profit we're using, right? When ownership starts throwing on all the other things of, right, we've got gardeners and pool boys that I'm managing, right? That's a different thing, right? So what we do is with some of our clients that are managing, we create segments of the business, right? So we create the ag operations and the entities of that. And these don't have to be legal structures, but economically, that's the box we're managing in. And then we might have owner values, right? And that's where things like landscapers and the 45 four-wheelers are going to sit, right? Is those things that sit over here that the owners want, so when they show up on the ranch, they can enjoy them. But we're not going to burden the cow herd with trying to create the cash flow to support these owner value draws. Right. So yeah, I think it's pretty high R squared. I mean, management can be responsible for a big chunk of that.
So you are putting a lot of trust and responsibility into the person that you put in place. That's no small decision. It shouldn't go to the silver tongue, smoothest talking, good looking Kevin Costner around. It should be a higher slow and fire fast.
Judge your ranch manager by how much crap is hanging off his saddle when he rides in, right? If he's got a lot of floppy stuff on his saddle, then he's obviously highly skilled.
Well, Dallas, as we approach the end of the podcast, I want to ask you, we're at $1,500 calves again when your host, Coulter DeVries, lost his ass. And he was forced to go from being a broke rancher to being a ranch broker. So, you know, 10-year cycle, we're back at it. We might create new ranch brokers out of this cattle cycle. Is it different this time though? Is it different, or is it the next 10 years going to be more of the same? Everyone thinks it's a different world post COVID, post inflation. And you got this silver tsunami, this gray wave coming of baby boomers who are knocking on death's door. Sorry, baby boomers listening out there. We don't want to put you out on the ice floats just yet. We'd like you to stick around and help take care of your grandkids. We need you for that. We don't need you to make management decisions though. But what the next 10 years, Dallas, what do you see happening?
See happening across ranch world, ranch economics, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be some times of exciting change. I'm actually really, really excited for what I think we're going to see happen. There's going to be a lot of volatility. Somebody was talking the other day about black swan events, right? Every time we black swans are so common, we're just going to start calling them Canadian geese now, right? I like that analogy. So I think there's going to be a lot of volatility as we move forward. There's going to be a lot more clarity in terms of management competence. I think there's going to be an enormous change in this. You're going to, for example, just like the satellite imagery, you're going to be able to tell health of landscapes by looking at Google Earth. I mean, you know, just pulling it up and saying whose ranches are well-managed from an ecology standpoint and where is the crap management occurring? And it's just going to be glaring and jump off the page to you, right? I think there's going to be more demand for competent managers of these ranches because ownership and operation is going to continue to divide, right? And a lot of people whine and carry on that that's the ruination. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. A lot of the people who are owner operators are running these places into the ground, you know, and you look at the level of ranch management that's occurring out there now, and it's pretty pathetic, to be honest. So I think as we have people come in and buy these wonderful assets, they're going to come to it and say, you know what, look, we need to actually get on the boat here and get this thing headed in the right direction. And so I think we might see improvements in land health, improvements in soil health. Hopefully these businesses are actually going to start picking off some money, which can go to supporting these rural communities, creating some rural wealth and those things as well. So I'm not really worried about the changes that we see coming. I think there are actually quite a bit of an excitement and some times to that are going to bring some exciting changes.
Well, you mentioned it earlier with the yin and the yang, where there's darkness, there's opportunity, where there's turbulence, that for many, that is an opportunity. And you talked about volatility is going to become the norm. I would agree with that. Volatility probably will become the norm, but that creates immense opportunity for people at different points in their life or their cycle. But planning, maybe incorporating a little Dave Ramsey fiscal conservatism to get ready for those cash opportunities. But I'm with you. As we attrition and kind of phase out of the baby boomers, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a smooth transition.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. It was interesting. You talked about, you know, you were joking, giving the baby boomers a razz about making the management decisions. And that's one of the things that in ag and in this world that we live in is the authority for decision-making needs to transition at an earlier age. Right. And when you look at how decisions are tightly held, especially in agricultural businesses, right, it's often the generation that is in the mode of wealth preservation that's making those decisions rather than the generation that's in the mode of growing and rejuvenation and you know, looking for opportunities. And I would like to see a transition more to that, you know, sure, we need to have financial security for those that are stepping out. But how do we give the authority for decision making to that group that's really ready to go? I mean, they got They're ready to hit the world and go out and do something stupid, you know. Let's rock and roll. So
like buying bred heifers in 2014.
Yeah, I mean, that was just stupid.
Well, thank you for your time, Dallas. I sure appreciate it. Hope we can stay in touch. And for anyone who's interested to learn more about Executive Link or Ranching for Profit, you guys have seminars in California, Idaho, Montana, Kansas, Oklahoma. Tell me how people can reach out to your group and what you have to offer this 2023.
Sure. Yeah. Go on our website, ranchingforprofit.com. Throw your email address in the pop-up window that comes up. That'll put you on our newsletter list. You know, we send out twice a month, we send out a newsletter with some article written about a ranch management topic. We're doing about a dozen schools this next year. So, you know, if you want to come to a school, that's probably the best way to really learn what we're up to is just to sign up and come. You know, I love having people come there that bring experiences and expertise from other industries and can cross-pollinate with the ranchers in the room. So, we've got books and DVDs, we've got YouTube channel, Facebook group, so all that stuff. So if you want to follow us on social media, we'd love to have you do that. But yeah, our schools have been selling out a few months ahead of time. And so if you want to kind of pick the dates and location you want to go to, it's best to just go ahead and throw your name on the list, because we got our next two schools, one in June and one in April, are totally sold out. So our next opportunity to come would be September, and we're recording this in late March. So.
Yeah, and this will be released only in 2 weeks, so it'll be pretty fresh. But one of my recommendations there, Dallas, is if you're a producer in Montana, consider a school in Texas or Alabama. If you're a producer in Kansas, consider one in Idaho, California, Washington. I think there's immense value to be gained from those other regions and cultural aspects and climate. So I would just say as an alumni, consider that. Don't go to the one down the road.
I completely agree. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Colter. If you ranch outside of Billings, Montana, the worst experience you're going to have is going to the Ranching for Profit School in Billings, Montana. Right. Because you're going to be tempted to go home at night and, you know, do those kind of things. You want to be in the room in Oklahoma City where, you know, in the evening time, you're going to go out and have a drink and have a meal with your buddies at Ranching for Profit. Right. And you guys are going to debrief the day. And yeah, that's the experience you want to have.
Well, great. Thank you for your time, Dallas. Sure appreciate it, and hope we can have you on again.
Click subscribe on your streaming platform so you know when the latest episode has dropped. Be the source of knowledge and the maven that other professionals are excited to refer.